Let's drink, Payne, he blurted out instead of making a speech. Everyone laughed. Good heavens. I thought he was going to begin again. Grushenko exclaimed nervously. Do you hear, Mitya, she went on insistently, don't prance about, but it's nice you've brought the champagne. I want some myself, and I can't bear liqueurs. And best of all, you've come yourself. We were fearfully dull here. You've come for a spree again, I suppose. But put your money in your pocket. Where did you get such a lot? Mitya had been, all this time, holding in his hand the crumpled bundle of notes on which the eyes of all, especially of the Poles, were fixed. In confusion he thrust them hurriedly into his pocket. He flushed. At that moment the innkeeper brought in an uncorked bottle of champagne, and glasses on a tray. Mitya snatched up the bottle, but he was so bewildered that he did not know what to do with it. Kalganov took it from him and poured out the champagne. Another. Another bottle. Mitya cried to the innkeeper, and, forgetting to clink glasses with the Pole whom he had so solemnly invited to drink to their good understanding, he drank off his glass without waiting for anyone else. His whole countenance suddenly changed. The solemn and tragic expression with which he had entered vanished completely, and a look of something childlike came into his face. He seemed to have become suddenly gentle and subdued. He looked shyly and happily at everyone, with a continual nervous little laugh, and the blissful expression of a dog who has done wrong, been punished, and forgiven. He seemed to have forgotten everything, and was looking round at everyone with a childlike smile of delight. He looked at Grushenka, laughing continually, and bringing his chair close up to her. By degrees he had gained some idea of the two Poles, though he had formed no definite conception of them yet. The Pole on the sofa struck him by his dignified demeanor and his polished accent, and, above all, by his pipe. Well, what of it? It's a good thing he's smoking a pipe, he reflected. The Pole's puffy, middle-aged face, with its tiny nose and two very thin, pointed, dyed and impudent, looking moustaches, had not so far roused the faintest doubts in Mitya. He was not even particularly struck by the Pole's absurd wig made in Siberia, with love, locks foolishly combed forward over the temples. I suppose it's all right since he wears a wig, he went on, musing blissfully. The other, younger Pole, who was staring insolently and defiantly at the company and listening to the conversation with silent contempt, still only impressed Mitya by his great height, which was in striking contrast to the Pole on the sofa. If he stood up he'd be 6'3". The thought flitted through Mitya's mind. It occurred to him, too, that this Pole must be the friend of the other, as it were, a bodyguard, and no doubt the big Pole was at the disposal of the little Pole with the pipe. But this all seemed to Mitya perfectly right and not to be questioned. In his mood of dog-like submissiveness all feeling of rivalry had died away. Grushenka's mood and the enigmatic tone of some of her words he completely failed to grasp. All he understood, with thrilling heart, was that she was kind to him, that she had forgiven him, and made him sit by her. He was beside himself with delight, watching her sip her glass of champagne. The silence of the company seemed somehow to strike him, however, and he looked round at everyone with expectant eyes. Why are we sitting here though, gentlemen? Why don't you begin doing something? His smiling eyes seemed to ask. He keeps talking nonsense, and we were all laughing, Kalganov began suddenly, as though divining his thought, and pointing to Maximov. Mitya immediately stared at Kalganov and then at Maximov. He's talking nonsense? He laughed, his short, wooden laugh, seeming suddenly delighted at something, ha ha. Yes. Would you believe it? He will have it that our cavalry officers in the 20s married Polish women. That's awful rot, isn't it? Polish women? Repeated Mitya, perfectly ecstatic. Kalganov was well aware of Mitya's attitude to Grushenka, and he guessed about the Pole, too, but that did not so much interest him, perhaps did not interest him at all. What he was interested in was Maximov. He had come here with Maximov by chance, and he met the Poles here at the inn for the first time in his life. Grushenka he knew before, and had once been with someone to see her, but she had not taken to him. But here she looked at him very affectionately. Before Mitya's arrival, she had been making much of him, but he seemed somehow to be unmoved by it. He was a boy, not over 20, dressed like a dandy, with a very charming fair, skinned face, and splendid thick, fair hair. From his fair face looked out beautiful pale blue eyes, with an intelligent and sometimes even deep expression, beyond his age indeed, although the young man sometimes looked and talked quite like a child, and was not at all ashamed of it, even when he was aware of it himself. As a rule he was very willful, even capricious, though always friendly. Sometimes there was something fixed and obstinate in his expression. He would look at you and listen, seeming all the while to be persistently dreaming over something else. Often he was listless and lazy, at other times he would grow excited, sometimes, apparently, over the most trivial matters. Only imagine, I've been taking him about with me for the last 4 days, he went on, indolently drawling his words, quite naturally though, without the slightest affectation. Ever since your brother, do you remember, shoved him off the carriage and sent him flying. That made me take an interest in him at the time, and I took him into the country, but he keeps talking such rot I'm ashamed to be with him. I'm taking him back. The gentleman has not seen Polish ladies, and says what is impossible, the Pole with the pipe observed to Maximov. He spoke Russian fairly well, much better, anyway, than he pretended. If he used Russian words, he always distorted them into a Polish form. But I was married to a Polish lady myself, tittered Maximov. But did you serve in the cavalry? You were talking about the cavalry. Were you a cavalry officer? Put in Kalganov at once. Was he a cavalry officer indeed? Ha ha! Cried Mitya, listening eagerly, and turning his inquiring eyes to each as he spoke, as though there were no knowing what he might hear from each. No, you see, Maximov turned to him. What I mean is that those pretty Polish ladies, when they danced the mazurka with our Ulens, when one of them dances a mazurka with Ulen, she jumps on his knee like a kitten. A little white one. And the pan, father and pan, mother look on and allow it. They allow it. And next day the Ulen comes and offers her his hand. That's how it is. Offers her his hand, hee hee. Maximov ended, tittering. The pan is a ladzdak. The tall Pole on the chair growled suddenly and crossed one leg over the other. Mitya's eye was caught by his huge greased boot, with its thick, dirty sole. The dress of both the Poles looked rather greasy. Scoundrel. Well, now it's ladzdak. What's he scolding about? Said Grushenka, suddenly vexed. Pani Agrippina, what the gentleman saw in Poland were servant girls, and not ladies of good birth, the Pole with the pipe observed to Grushenka. You can reckon on that, the tall Pole snapped contemptuously. What next? Let him talk. People talk, why hinder them? It makes it cheerful, Grushenka said crossly. I'm not hindering them, Pani, said the Pole in the wig, with a long look at Grushenka, and relapsing into dignified silence he sucked his pipe again. No, no. The Polish gentleman spoke the truth. Kalganov got excited again, as though it were a question of vast import. He's never been in Poland, so how can he talk about it? I suppose you weren't married in Poland, were you? No, in the province of Smolensk. Only, Ulen had brought her to Russia before that, my future wife, with her mama and her aunt, and another female relation with a grown-up son. He brought her straight from Poland and gave her up to me. He was a lieutenant in our regiment, a very nice young man. At first he meant to marry her himself. But he didn't marry her, because she turned out to be lame. So you married a lame woman? Cried Kalganov. Yes. They both deceived me a little bit at the time, and concealed it. I thought she was hopping, she kept hopping. I thought it was for fun. So pleased she was going to marry you. Yelled Kalganov, in a ringing, childish voice. "Yes, so pleased." But it turned out to be quite a different cause. Afterwards, when we were married, after the wedding, that very evening, she confessed, and very touchingly asked forgiveness. "I once jumped over a puddle when I was a child," she said, "and injured my leg." "He he." Kalganov went off into the most childish laughter, almost falling on the sofa. Grushenka, too, laughed. Mitya was at the pinnacle of happiness. "Do you know, that's the truth, he's not lying now," exclaimed Kalganov, turning to Mitya, "and do you know, he's been married twice, it's his first wife he's talking about. But his second wife, do you know, ran away, and is alive now. Is it possible?" said Mitya, turning quickly to Maximov with an expression of the utmost astonishment. "Yes. She did run away. I've had that unpleasant experience," Maximov modestly assented, with a monsieur. "And what was worse, she'd had all my little property transferred to her beforehand. 'You're an educated man,' she said to me. 'You can always get your living.' She settled my business with that. A venerable bishop once said to me, 'One of your wives was lame, but the other was too light-footed.' He he." "Listen, listen," cried Kalganov, bubbling over. "If he's telling lies, and he often is, he's only doing it to amuse us all. There's no harm in that, is there? You know, I sometimes like him. He's awfully low, but it's natural to him, eh? Don't you think so? Some people are low from self-interest, but he's simply so, from nature. Only fancy, he claims, he was arguing about it all the way yesterday, that Gogol wrote Dead Souls about him. Do you remember, there's a landowner called Maximov in it, whom Nozdryov thrashed? He was charged, do you remember, for inflicting bodily injury with rods on the landowner Maximov in a drunken condition? Would you believe it, he claims that he was that Maximov and that he was beaten. Now can it be so? Chichikov made his journey, at the very latest, at the beginning of the 20s, so that the dates don't fit. He couldn't have been thrashed then, he couldn't, could he? It was difficult to imagine what Kalganov was excited about, but his excitement was genuine. Mitya followed his lead without protest. "Well, but if they did thrash him," he cried, laughing. "It's not that they thrashed me exactly, but what I mean is," put in Maximov. "What do you mean? Either they thrashed you or they didn't. What o'clock is it, Penny?" the Pole, with the pipe, asked his tall friend, with a bored expression. The other shrugged his shoulders in reply. Neither of them had a watch. "Why not talk? Let other people talk. Mustn't other people talk because you're bored?" Grushenka flew at him with evident intention of finding fault. Something seemed for the first time to flash upon Mitya's mind. This time the Pole answered with unmistakable irritability. "Panny, I didn't oppose it. I didn't say anything." "All right then. Come, tell us your story," Grushenka cried to Maximov. "Why are you all silent?" "There's nothing to tell, it's all so foolish," answered Maximov at once, with evident satisfaction, mincing a little. "Besides, all that's by way of allegory in Gogol, for he's made all the names have a meaning. Nozdryov was really called Nozov, and Kuvshinikov had quite a different name, he was called Shkvornev. Finady really was called Finady, only he wasn't an Italian but a Russian, and Momsel Finady was a pretty girl with her pretty little legs in tights, and she had a little short skirt with spangles, and she kept turning round and round, only not for 4 hours but for 4 minutes only, and she bewitched everyone." "But what were you beaten for?" cried Kalganov. "For pun," answered Maximov. "What pun?" cried Mitya. "The famous French writer, pun. We were all drinking then, a big party of us, in a tavern at that very fair. They'd invited me, and first of all I began quoting epigrams. 'Is that you, Boiler? What a funny get up.' And Boiler answers that he's going to a masquerade, that is to the baths, he he. And they took it to themselves, So I made haste to repeat another, very sarcastic, well known to all educated people, yes, Sappho and Phaon are we. But one grief is weighing on me. You don't know your way to the sea. They were still more offended and began abusing me in the most unseemly way for it. And as ill luck would have it, to set things right, I began telling a very cultivated anecdote about Pon, how he was not accepted into the French Academy, and to revenge himself wrote his own epitaph, "Se git Pon qui ne fut rien, parmi m'académicien, here lies Pon, who was nothing, not even an academician." They seized me and thrashed me. But what for? What for? For my education. People can thrash a man for anything, Maximov concluded, briefly and sententiously. Eh, that's enough. That's all stupid, I don't want to listen. I thought it would be amusing, Grushenka cut them short, suddenly. Mitya started, and at once left off laughing. The tall Pole rose upon his feet, and with the haughty air of a man, bored and out of his element, began pacing from corner to corner of the room, his hands behind his back. Ah, he can't sit still, said Grushenka, looking at him contemptuously. Mitya began to feel anxious. He noticed besides, that the Pole on the sofa was looking at him with an irritable expression. Pain me, cried Mitya, let's drink. And the other pan, too. Let us drink. In a flash he had pulled three glasses towards him, and filled them with champagne. To Poland, Panovie, I drink to your Poland, cried Mitya. I shall be delighted, Pany, said the Pole on the sofa, with dignity and affable condescension, and he took his glass. And the other pan, what's his name? Drink, most illustrious, take your glass, Mitya urged. Pan Wroblewski, put in the Pole on the sofa. Pan Wroblewski came up to the table, swaying as he walked. To Poland, Panovie, cried Mitya, raising his glass. Hurrah! All three drank. Mitya seized the bottle and again poured out three glasses. Now to Russia, Panovie, and let us be brothers. Pour out some for us, said Grushenka, I'll drink to Russia, too. So will I, said Kalganov. And I would, too. To Russia, the old grandmother, tittered Maximov. All, cried Mitya. Trifon Borisovich, some more bottles. The other three bottles Mitya had brought with him were put on the table. Mitya filled the glasses. To Russia. Hurrah! He shouted again. All drank the toast except the Poles, and Grushenka tossed off her whole glass at once. The Poles did not touch theirs. How's this, Panovie? Cried Mitya, won't you drink it? Pan Wroblewski took the glass, raised it and said with a resonant voice, to Russia as she was before 1772? Come, that's better, cried the other Pole, and they both emptied their glasses at once. You're fools, you Panovie, broke suddenly from Mitya. Painly, shouted both the Poles, menacingly, setting on Mitya like a couple of cocks. Pan Wroblewski was specially furious. Can one help loving one's own country? He shouted. Be silent. Don't quarrel. I won't have any quarreling, cried Grushenka imperiously, and she stamped her foot on the floor. Her face glowed, her eyes were shining. The effects of the glass she had just drunk were apparent. Mitya was terribly alarmed. Panovie, forgive me. It was my fault, I'm sorry. Wroblewski, Pani Wroblewski, I'm sorry. Hold your tongue, you, anyway. Sit down, you stupid. Grushenka scolded with angry annoyance. Everyone sat down, all were silent, looking at one another. Gentlemen, I was the cause of it all, Mitya began again, unable to make anything of Grushenka's words. Come, why are we sitting here? What shall we do? To amuse ourselves again? Look, it's certainly anything but amusing. Kalganov mumbled lazily. Let's play Pharaoh again, as we did just now, Maximov tittered suddenly. Pharaoh? Splendid! Cried Mitya. If only the Panovie. It's light, Panovie, the Pole on the sofa responded, as it were unwillingly. That's true, assented Pan Vrublevsky. Light? What do you mean by light? Asked Grushenka. Late, Panny. A late hour, I mean, the Pole on the sofa explained. It's always late with them. They can never do anything. Grushenka almost shrieked in her anger. They're dull themselves, so they want others to be dull. Before came, Mitya, they were just as silent and kept turning up their noses at me. My goddess! Cried the Pole on the sofa, I see you're not well, disposed to me, that's why I'm gloomy. I'm ready, Painy, added he, addressing Mitya. Begin, Painy, Mitya assented, pulling his notes out of his pocket, and laying 200-ruble notes on the table. I want to lose a lot to you. Take your cards. Make the bank. We'll have cards from the landlord, Painy, said the little Pole, gravely and emphatically. That's much the best way, chimed in Pan Vrublevsky. From the landlord? Very good, I understand, let's get them from him. Cards. Mitya shouted to the landlord. The landlord brought in a new, unopened pack, and informed Mitya that the girls were getting ready, and that the Jews with the symbols would most likely be here soon, but the cart with the provisions had not yet arrived. Mitya jumped up from the table and ran into the next room to give orders, but only three girls had arrived, and Maria was not there yet. And he did not know himself what orders to give and why he had run out. He only told them to take out of the box the presents for the girls, the sweets, the toffee and the fondants. And vodka for Andrei, vodka for Andrei. He cried in haste. I was rude to Andrei. Suddenly Maximov, who had followed him out, touched him on the shoulder. Give me 5 rubles, he whispered to Mitya. I'll stake something at Faro, too, he. Capital. Splendid. Take 10, here. Again he took all the notes out of his pocket and picked out 1 for 10 rubles. And if you lose that, come again, come again. Very good, Maximov whispered joyfully, and he ran back again. Mitya, too, returned, apologizing for having kept them waiting. The Poles had already sat down, and opened the pack. They looked much more amiable, almost cordial. The Pole on the sofa had lighted another pipe and was preparing to throw. He wore an air of solemnity. To your places, gentlemen, cried Pan Vrublevsky. No, I'm not going to play any more, observed Kalganov, I've lost 50 rubles to them just now. The Pan had no luck, perhaps he'll be lucky this time, the Pole on the sofa observed in his direction. How much in the bank? To correspond? Asked Mitya. That's according, Painy, maybe 100, maybe 200, as much as you will stake. 1 million. Laughed Mitya. The Pan captain has heard of Pan Podvisitsky, perhaps? What Podvisitsky? In Warsaw there was a bank and anyone comes and stakes against it. Podvisitsky comes, sees 1,000 gold pieces, stakes against the bank. The banker says, Painy Podvisitsky, are you laying down the gold, or must we trust to your honor? To my honor, Painy, says Podvisitsky. So much the better. The banker throws the dice. Podvisitsky wins. Take it, Painy, says the banker, and pulling out the drawer he gives him 1 million. Take it, Painy, this is your gain. There was 1 million in the bank. I didn't know that, says Podvisitsky. Painy Podvisitsky, said the banker, you pledged your honor and we pledged ours. Podvisitsky took 1 million. That's not true, said Kalganov. Painy Kalganov, in gentlemanly society one doesn't say such things. As if a Polish gambler would give away 1 million, cried Mitya, but checked himself at once. Forgive me, Painy, it's my fault again, he would give away 1 million, for honor, for Polish honor. You see how I talk Polish, ha ha. Here, I stake 10 rubles, the knave leads. And I put 1 ruble on the queen of hearts, the pretty little Panienichka he. Laughed Maximov, pulling out his queen, and, as though trying to conceal it from everyone, He moved right up and crossed himself hurriedly under the table. Mitya 1. The ruble 1, 2. Little miss. A corner. Cried Mitya. I'll bet another ruble, a single stake, Maximov, muttered gleefully, hugely delighted at having won a ruble. Lost? Shouted Mitya. A double on the 7. The 7-2 was trumped. Stop! Cried Kalganov suddenly. Double. Double. Mitya doubled his stakes, and each time he doubled the stake, the card he doubled was trumped by the Poles. The ruble stakes kept winning. On the double. Shouted Mitya furiously. You've lost 200, Painley. Will you stake another 100? The Pole on the sofa inquired. What? Lost 200 already? Then another 200. All doubles. And pulling his money out of his pocket, Mitya was about to fling 200 rubles on the queen, but Kalganov covered it with his hand. That's enough. He shouted in his ringing voice. What's the matter? Mitya stared at him. That's enough. I don't want you to play any more. Don't. Why? Because I don't. Hang it, come away. That's why. I won't let you go on playing. Mitya gazed at him in astonishment. Give it up, Mitya. He may be right. You've lost a lot as it is, said Grushenka, with a curious note in her voice. Both the Poles rose from their seats with a deeply offended air. Are you joking, Paney? Said the short man, looking severely at Kalganov. How dare you? Pan Vrublevsky, too, growled at Kalganov. Don't dare to shout like that, cried Grushenka. Ah, you turkey, cox. Mitya looked at each of them in turn. But something in Grushenka's face suddenly struck him, and at the same instant something new flashed into his mind, a strange new thought. Pani Agrippina, the little Pole was beginning, crimson with anger, when Mitya suddenly went up to him and slapped him on the shoulder. Most illustrious, two words with you. Cried Grushenka. What do you want? In the next room, I've two words to say to you, something pleasant, very pleasant. You'll be glad to hear it. The little Pan was taken aback and looked apprehensively at Mitya. He agreed at once, however, on condition that Pan Vrublevsky went with them. The bodyguard. Let him come, and I want him, too. I must have him. Cried Mitya. March, Panovi. Where are you going? Asked Grushenka, anxiously. We'll be no back in one moment, answered Mitya. There was a sort of boldness, a sudden confidence shining in his eyes. His face had looked very different when he entered the room an hour before. He led the Poles, not into the large room where the chorus of girls was assembling and the table was being laid, but into the bedroom on the right, where the trunks and packages were kept, and there were two large beds, with pyramids of cotton pillows on each. There was a lighted candle on a small deal table in the corner. The small man and Mitya sat down to this table, facing each other, while the huge Vrublevsky stood beside them, his hands behind his back. The Poles looked severe but were evidently inquisitive. What can I do for you, Paney? Lisped the little Pole. Well, look here, Paney, I won't keep you long. There's money for you. He pulled out his notes. Would you like 3,000? Take it and go your way. The Pole gazed open, eyed at Mitya, with a searching look. 3,000, Paney? He exchanged glances with Vrublevsky. 3, Panovi, 3. Listen, Paney, I see you're a sensible man. Take 3,000 and go to the devil, and Vrublevsky with you do you hear? But, at once, this very minute, and forever. You understand that, Paney, forever. Here's the door, you go out of it. What have you got there? A great coat, a fur coat. I'll bring it out to you. They'll get the horses out directly, and then, good, bye, Paney. Mitya awaited an answer with assurance. He had no doubts. An expression of extraordinary resolution passed over the Pole's face. And the money, Paney? The money, Paney? 500 rubles I'll give you this moment for the journey, and as a first installment, and 2,502, morrow, in the town, I swear on my honor, I'll get it at any cost," cried Mitya. The Poles exchanged glances again.